As I said before, I'm really excited about the session. It's three really good speakers to talk to you about pathways to market. I'd also like to thank Adam for warming up this session with his session immediately prior to this. Gave a really good introduction to what we're going to be talking about now. Our first speaker is Anthony Day. Anthony is the Chief Executive Officer of Suncorp Commercial Insurance. Anthony joined Suncorp in 2008, bringing with him some 30 years of experience working with local and international insurers in various roles, including claims, underwriting, and senior management positions. He was appointed the CEO of Commercial Insurance in 2009. As CEO of Commercial Insurance, he's responsible for all of Suncorp's commercial insurance businesses operating in Australia, including the Suncorp, GIO and Vero brands, as well as the group's workers' comp and CTP insurances. Anthony is also well at home in this area of the world, as he's a keen Brisbane Lions fan. So please welcome Anthony.
Thanks a lot, Warwick, and thanks a lot for inviting me along today. If I had have known that the bar was open until 2:30, I probably would have stayed for tonight, so it sounds like a lot of fun. But today, I guess the way the three of us kind of split it up and talking about different things, and I'd really like to cover off a bit about the history of our industry and how changes to those pathways has evolved over time. And successful companies are ones that are able to adapt to the future changes. Before I jump into that, you know, I'd just give you some insight into my views on running a general insurance business. And in October, late last year, I was interviewed at that time by our group CEO. And he asked me what I thought it took to run a general insurance business. Being a bit cheeky, I thought I'd tell him, you know, it's pretty easy. There's only four things you have to get right. This sparked a bit of interest, and he said, okay, tell me why this is so easy and what are these four things? So I told him, all you need to really do is get the right customers in the door, which is your risk selection. The second thing is charge the right premiums, which is your pricing. The third thing is pay your claims, which is your claims experience. And the fourth thing is you've got to be able to distribute your products in the right way. So for me, when it comes to defining pathways to the market in the general insurance industry, these are the fundamentals. The challenge is how you execute these four things and adapt to change in the marketplace and society. So firstly, let's go back about 50 years or so, when virtually every class of insurance business was controlled by a tariff, which set a whole lot of underwriting terms and conditions, from policy wordings and minimum premium rates for each occupation, trade or risk category, to permissible rates and discounts. Underwriting wasn't so much an exercise in skill or judgment as it is today. It was more about legitimately applying the tariff rules or seeking special dispensation for the all-powerful tariff committees. Then in 1974, the Trade Practices Act saw an end to tariffs, which meant insurers needed to develop their own underwriting guidelines and rates based on their own experience. This was the first step in our industry looking like it does today, and it made skills in risk selection and pricing very highly prized. Around the same time, there was a major shift in insurance distribution. For generations, distribution had been through networks of local agents like lawyers, accountants, stock and station agents, all serviced by inspectors from insurance companies. In the 1970s, distribution became dominated by insurance brokers who weren't tied to an insurer and brought about the need for insurance companies to distinguish their products and propositions for their competitors. Technology also came to the fore, with computers arriving at this time. Microfiche machines were used to file policy records, but there were often only a couple of terminals per floor, a far cry from the iPhones and BlackBerries that most of us carry around today. Once we hit the 80s, distribution changed as insurers globally headed down the acquisition path. Brokers began to form networks and regulators started to introduce new rules. The influences of these factors continued to grow their significance in the next few decades. Speed to market change for customers as well as leading edge broker linked systems allowed brokers to place their clients' risks electronically with less reliance on human intervention. Insurance was categorised in the 80s by prolonged soft market conditions in Australia. There were over 100 insurers hungrily competing for a business amongst the 1,000 or so brokers. Underwriting profits were unheard of, and insurers kept their heads above water through strong investment income from the buoyant share market. The 80s also saw some catastrophic losses. The biggest and infamous was the Ash Wednesday bushfires in 1983 in Victoria and South Australia. Then there was the Newcastle earthquake of late December 1989 and caused over $1 billion damage, when $1 billion actually meant something. The 1990s was a real decade of change, of consolidation in the insurance industry as capital was squeezed. In 1992, the same year as the Florida Hurricane Katrina, cost $20 billion and reinsurance capacity dried up overnight. Royal Sun Alliance merged here in Australia, paving the way for the eventual creation of the Promina Group and Vero brand, which Suncorp is intermediated commercial insurance brand. This was interesting as it reflected insurers creating a specialist brand in particular niche markets. As consolidation of the insurance industry continued in the 2000s, we had HIH collapse, and in 2007, Suncorp and Promina executed one of the largest corporate mergers in Australian history, creating Australia's largest general insurance company by gross written premium. Direct distribution, inspired by the need to respond to customers' changing buying habits, efficiency in terms in both time and cost became important with insurers competing to invest in technology that would allow us to capitalise on trends in buying. That, of course, brings us to 2008 and the global financial crisis. Fortunately, Australia emerged from this crisis better than most other nations, although we still see recovery will be slow and bumpy, marked by ongoing global risk and increasing interest rates here, as we saw last week. So where does that leave us in 2010 and our pathways to market? In Australia, there are currently 136 licensed insurers to conduct general insurance business in Australia. The general insurance sector is crowded, highly competitive, and large in terms of premium pool. The gross premium revenue for the general insurance sector is around $33 billion. So it's back to the four fundamentals of risk selection, pricing, claims and distribution. And how does an insurer operating in today's environment get these fundamentals right? Most local insurers would agree their approach to pricing has become more sophisticated, particularly over the last few years. Greater amounts of historical, geographical information, improved data quality and modelling have meant insurers are better able to analyse specific risks, their exposure and performance within portfolios. When pricing is more accurate, insurers can increase their appetite for risk and expand products and coverage on offer to their clients. Sophistication of data, modelling and pricing engines at the disposal of major insurers should lead to a smoothing out of the traditional insurance cycle as rates become even more closely aligned with the exact risk. That means that most of the successful insurers will be those with the scale to leverage this data, who can also take advantage of the economies of scale when it comes to key operating functions like claims and distribution. Improved pricing data means that natural perils such as flood, bushfire, storm surge can now be far more accurately assessed on an address-specific basis. Therefore, customers not charged for perils they have limited or no exposure to. In the case of natural disasters, peril modelling and geographical risk data can also help insurers to understand the potential volume and types of claims they can expect, and allow them to allocate resources required to manage the claims of these unfortunate events. In the future, Suncorp can absolutely see a world where in-depth 3D modelling will allow pricing to be done with pinpoint accuracy every time, or where satellite technology is used to investigate claims or conduct remote risk surveys. Pricing engines can help insurers generate consistency in pricing between similar risks and exposures, introducing a level of equity to the market. And consistency in pricing should make premiums more sustainable and reduce the volatility of the cycle as the right premiums have been charged. Simpler, more commoditised products like home, contents, personal motor and some simple package products for micro business lend themselves to the pricing engine approach. However, it's worth pointing out that the value and benefit these kind of consolidation of data diminishes as the sophistication and complexity of the individual risk increases. For more complex risks and exposures that come with the mid-market and corporate business, the experience and expertise of underwriting and actuaries will remain crucial both in understanding exposures and in pricing for them. Insurers now have access to a huge amount of data that exists on risks, exposures and geography. But the mere existence of data in its isolation has limited value. The capability to analyse and understand that data is where the true value lies. So the effect of more sophisticated pricing and emergence of simpler products is already impacting distribution. New research we've commissioned shows there has been a significant increase in the proportion of small businesses buying their insurance directly from an insurer. In fact, this proportion has gone from 26% in 2004 to 40% in 2010. Smaller and new small businesses are most likely dealing directly with an insurer. There are a few reasons why this might be the case. Firstly, small businesses are increasingly using the internet to source information about their general insurance requirements. Another reason is insurers are using technology to make their insurance products more accessible to customers. And thirdly, we're seeing a change in demographics of small business owners. This leads us to recognise that we need the distribution channels and capabilities to meet the needs of all of our customers, no matter what their buying preference is. So what's that all mean? So, for someone like Sue here, who decides that they want to manage their policy by themselves without interaction or advice, they can go to the website and purchase a policy. Or someone over here, like David, wants to speak to an insurer about his policy. He can call one of the call centres or see one of the agents. Or James in the back would like independent advice from someone not tied to a particular company. He can call a broker. Or someone else wants just to deal with one company for all their financial services. They can partner with a bank, a credit union to cater for them. It's all about flexibility and having the capacity to respond to customers' buying behaviour as it continues to change and evolve, and having the flexibility to dial up and dial down corresponding with service propositions with customer demand. Technology is obviously one of the major changes we've seen in the business in recent years. It has driven customer buying habits and is providing us with the ability to be more agile and nimble in our response. Generally, other industries and other parts of the banking and finance sector have been quicker to embrace technology than our industry. But we've now recognised that technology is key to distribution. The race is well and truly on as various groups within our industry strive to strip out cost of their business by reducing duplication and increasing efficiency. However, The rise in technology and online processing must not be realised at the expense of relationships. Technology allows us to respond to customers' changing buying habits, but the people and processes that support the technology are crucial to the acceptance and usage. Therefore, success in distribution will come from those insurers who invest both in technology and service, who are able to implement a holistic value proposition with flexibility to adapt and develop that the competitors cannot match. To this point, it's also driving improvements in claims experience. But again, we should not lose the sight of the human emotion factor. Anyone who's ever had lodged an insurance claim will know that it can be a stressful experience, even when the insurer is doing a good job. Claims proves an insurer's worth. Ultimately, what we're selling is a promise to support our customers where things go wrong. We're determined to improve customer claims experience through technology investments and also empathy, as research shows that that's what's important to people. The insurance industry discusses constantly the monetary impact of major insurance events, but how often do we discuss the emotional cost? At the moment, we're looking at how well insurers understand the psychological effects of losses and what we can do to help. For example, engaging customers early, communicating more frequently, and ensuring that customers understand the process and progress of their claims. So I've touched already on some of the areas that we see, of what we see coming, but expand on now on what the future holds for the industry. Australia is now in its 20th year of economic growth, and this is forecast to continue due to the growth of the developing countries such as China and India. I'm often asked for my prediction when it comes to pricing, and we can see that in personal lines, recent major weather events led to a hardening of the market, while capacity and competition will leave rates fairly flat in other areas. However, I argue that the sophistication of data, modelling and pricing engines at the disposal of most major insurers will lead to a smoothing out of the traditional insurance cycle as rates become even more closely aligned with the exact risk. That means most successful insurers will be those with the scale to leverage this data, who can take advantage of the economies of scale when it comes to key operating functions like claims and distribution. When it comes to technology, who knows what the future holds? 10 years ago, few of us would be using the internet to do our banking. And now look how commonplace online banking has become. As I mentioned earlier, the industry has come a very long way when it comes to risk rating and the use of data and pricing engines. Imagine the world in which in-depth 3D modelling allows pricing to be done with pinpoint accuracy every time, where satellite technology was used to investigate claims and conduct remote risk surveys. With the popularity and sophistication of mobile technology like iPhones and iPads, we're not far off a time when policyholders submit real-time video images of their damaged property in our claim staff, who assess and agree the claims on the spot. The challenge for insurers is to build technology with the flexibility to develop and grow over time, rather than just addressing immediate needs. This means understanding the ever-changing needs of the market and your business and staying on the pulse of technology innovation. Success will come to those insurers who are able to implement a holistic value proposition with the flexibility to adapt and develop on that. Competition will be fierce for the experienced, capable people in the industry. That will mean employees need to work harder to attract, train, and retain talent within their own organisations. Clearly, the industry has been through enormous change and continues to evolve at a rapid pace. But I maintain the fundamentals of running an insurance business, like I'd argued with our group CEO, have and will persevere. Whether using sophisticated pricing engines or utilising the expertise of experienced underwriters and actuaries, you need to select the right risks and make sure they're matched with the right premiums. You need to pay your claims and fulfil the promise you made to customers when they take out the insurance policy. And you need to give your customers the options that they want when it comes to how to purchase their insurance. In all these areas, you'll need to be flexible, agile with your business strategy and operations to make sure that when the market changes, you're already responding. Thank you.
Thanks, Anthony, for sharing that discussion of the fundamentals of general insurance and your views on the future pathways to market. Thanks also for sharing your unique personal collection of photos of the office equipment that was in vogue when you started your career. Next up, we have Vivek Bhatia, CEO of Wesfarmers General Insurance. Vivek was appointed the Chief Executive Officer of Lumley Insurance in January 2009. He joined Wesfarmers Insurance in January 2008 as the Chief Operating Officer across Lumley and Wesfarmers Federated Insurance business. In March 2010, he was appointed the Chief Executive Officer of Wesfarmers General Insurance Limited, which encompasses the businesses of Wesfarmers Insurance and WFI. In 2008, Vivek was selected by the Australian Financial Review's Boss Magazine as a finalist in their Young Executive of the Year Awards. Please welcome Vivek to the stage.
Thanks, Warwick. I don't think I can go on too long claiming to be young, but I'll try my best. Last week I had a very interesting incident. I got summoned by the school teacher, the class teacher of my 6.5-year-old daughter, and she said to me that your daughter talks about you and often in her news items and says that my dad keeps on going on holidays during the week. And that was and she said you know, what's happening, you know? And I said, I'm not quite sure. And she said, he kept on saying that I've gone to Gold Coast a couple of times in the last few weeks, which I have. And she keeps saying that it's on holidays. So thanks for the people who organize the conferences on Gold Coast. It is really destroying my reputation and credibility in my school. So, but apart from that, it's a wonderful place to be. And thank you very much for the invitation. What I'd like to do today is talk a bit about alternate distribution channels in the personal line space, and try and emphasize what my views are in terms of where the distribution space is going in the personal lines market in Australia. So personal lines, large and lucrative market, I don't need to say much. There's been a lot of stats and data that has been put in front of you during the course of the day today, initially by Siddharth and then by Estelle and then by Adam as well in the concurrent sessions. But we have got a pretty comprehensive picture. We are talking about motor and home being about 40% of the GWP within the Australian market space. But also, more importantly, it is 25% of the earnings of the top players in the market, the top two players who have 74% of the market share in these two lines of business. So when it comes to the growth, and we talked about hardening, and Anthony mentioned that the events in the last couple of years have led to a bit of hardening in the personal lines market, which is reflected in the average annual GWP growth of 5 to 7% when the risk growth is only 1 to 2%. So you can see some rate hardening at that point of time. And and below we have got the EBITDA potential, which we believe across the businesses to be close to $1 billion, and in profit I think $1 billion still matters. Unfortunately, not in premium anymore because as we have seen earlier on, the margins have dwindled way too much. In terms of the traditional oligopoly that has prevailed in the market space. We have seen two large incumbents in the market through acquisition and through consolidation over the last few years. As I said, There is close to 74% or 75% market share, depending upon which numbers you look at, held in terms of those two large groups. And over the last couple of years, as per Adam's presentation, which we saw earlier, there have been a number of new entrants in the personal lines market space. And some of them have been traditional entrants, which are foreign players who have entered the market as challenger brands. And of late, there have also been some what we call as left field players in the market space who are retailers, non-insurance organizations who have decided to offer their customers an insurance offering with based on some white label relationships with insurance players. My talk and focus for the next 10 minutes will be on some of those players. Before I move on to that, I just wanted to highlight, I guess, the propensity of people to start using the internet as a valid channel for inquiry. You know, we know for a fact that there is a lot of inquiry that is placed through the internet channel. As you can see, it is surpassing the traditional channel of call center and phone inquiries. I looked at some stats, and I wanted to just talk about stats to understand what is the percentage of Australian population which looks for products and services on the internet. And I was pretty amazed to see that it is 78% as we speak. What is interesting is that over the last 12 months, it's actually 87%. So the increasing trend of people getting more and more comfortable to look for products and services on the internet is hugely increasing. People are getting more comfortable, rightly or wrongly, but there's definitely a very clear trend in terms of the comfort and the convenience that the consumers are choosing to apply. 61% have actually ordered goods and services. So that's an increasing number in its own right. And yes, as you can see, those numbers are not nearly as high as the ones inquiring for goods and services, and especially from an insurance perspective. We are seeing that the trend is surely going in one direction. In fact, what I found really interesting is that the gap of looking versus buying still exists, but is about 20% as to about 30% about 5 years ago. So as you can very easily say, that the last 5 years has meant that there are 50% more people who are now looking and buying as opposed to looking, just in 2004. And we can be rest assured that the next 5 years will make that gap narrow even further. What was interesting for me was that 41% of the Australian population actually is on a social networking site. 41% have actually read a blog, and 18% have written one. And what that means is that in terms of people communicating via traditional channels, such as advertising, TV, radio, this is changing. Someone read out a stat to me the other day that 78% of people do not believe in advertising, but do believe in what their peers have to say. And one of the ways of them to get that information is through blogs and social networking sites. It is a bit of a scary world out there, and we thought at that point of time, well, maybe they're only down to 30s or 20s who are looking at social networking sites. And then something totally stumped me when I saw that the fastest growing segment on Facebook is 55 to 65-year-old females. Not a demographic I'm personally interested in, but you know, it was very surprising to me to see that demographic actually take a real active interest in terms of getting on to social networking and looking for information and sharing of ideas based on a different platform altogether to the traditional means. And as internet becomes faster, more accessible, and apps become more convenient and user-friendly, we will see that only go upwards. So in the last year, we have seen retail distribution well and truly emerge in Australia, and here are a few large retailing brands that have partnered with underwriting organizations to access their customer base and put forward a customer value proposition for insurance products. And most of these rely on call center and online quote and conversion. There is extremely limited in-store activity apart from promotion. So in terms of key success factors, you know, whenever we talk about retail distribution, there is a poster boy which is out there, which is Tesco. And you know, no matter who you talk to, everybody says, hey, look at Tesco. Tesco did it. But Tesco did it in very different circumstances too. At that point of time, there was a high degree of intermediation in the personal lines space in the UK, which was in the year 2000 when Tesco launched personal lines through Tesco Financial Services, which was a JV between them and Royal Bank of Scotland. And over the first 2 years, Tesco attracted 500,000 new customers. That's a pretty large number, even by the UK market standards. But that was very different to the Australian market space, where it is already a largely direct market. So the proliferation of retailer brands selling insurance is not nearly going to be as high, in my opinion, as it has been in the likes of the UK. And that's predominantly also because Tesco's had a very well-defined customer value proposition when it came to loyalty, which is one of the key distinguishing factors. I think that the retailers in Australia still have a way to go before that loyalty is a standout proposition. And that can be leveraged very, very cleanly into the insurance offerings to the market space. The five factors which we internally talk about in terms of what makes or breaks a retailer underwriter proposition to the market space are clearly the retailer's customer market share and strength in the market space. For us, with Coles, that's 10 million people who walk into a Coles store every week. That's half of Australia's population. So that's a tick there. There's a brand strength and trust in terms of what do the customers and the consumers think about Wesfarmers and Coles as a brand. And if you look at various surveys that are done, generally a brand like Wesfarmers and Coles ends up in the top 10, which is far higher than some of the pure insurance players in terms of brand strength. And very clearly, the strong product and pricing proposition cannot be ignored. And without a strong pricing and product proposition, it is very difficult to enter a market which has got 76% of consolidation between the top two players and penetrate the market in a succinct manner and a sustainable way. So one of the key things there is that, you know, in the World Insurance Report of 2009, it said that 80% of the purchase decision impact for an insurance offering is based on price, product, and brand and trust. So thus the top three criteria are 80% of the factors that impact somebody's decision to buy insurance from X or Y. No channel conflict with underwriters, and that's an interesting thing because if I looked at the previous graph, the chart on the right-hand side, you would see insurers who have got minimal market share when it compares to the big two in terms of personal lines. So cannibalization and channel conflict is extremely limited, which is a real positive part for the industry and retailer-based distribution. And additional incentives and value for customers, i.e., as I said, you know, loyalty program. So people ask me all the time, so what do you think about Kohl's? And you know, what one of the things that we have said is that from our perspective, it is a household name. It is a brand which is going through a resurgence in its own right. And anybody who has seen Kohl's over the last 2 to 3 years has seen a new Kohl's emerge from what it was. And it is a perfect opportunity for us to offer on behalf of Kohl's an insurance offering to their customer base. And if we have the opportunity to link it back to a discrete loyalty offer, such as a fuel discount or flyby points, then we believe that we have the trifecta to be able to make an impact. And I was pleased to see that one of the analyst reports, which came out a few weeks ago, actually reiterated our belief in terms of the ability and the potential for Kohl's to be able to make that impact in the market space. One of the things that, you know, having said this, one of the things that I'd like to very clearly point out is that within our organization, we have a very firm belief that this is not a short-term or a medium-term proposition. People do not switch brands just because there is a viable offering out there. You know, it is still a very sticky product. And I'll get to aggregators very quickly, where it no longer becomes a very sticky product, and that's why there is a high level of skepticism, and rightly so, in terms of what that does to the market dynamics. But when it comes to looking at a retailer like Kohl's or Woolworths or Myers or Australia Post, their ability to penetrate the market in a meaningful way and significantly take away market share from the incumbents is a longer-term aspiration and only a potential at best at this point of time. So there is a long road ahead before any of these alternate distribution channels start becoming a viable threat to the market shares that exist in the top two players. Aggregators. There's not been a single conversation, I don't know, in the last 5 years, 7 years, that we haven't been asked. So when are aggregators going to enter the market space? And I'll limit my comment to the personal line space. In the personal line space, you know, all of us have got the example of what has happened in the UK motor market specifically. When renewal rates drop to 40%, no one actually has a good time. And it is not sustainable because you cannot keep offering insurance, which is as we all know, a peace of mind offering to our consumers at a expense of the shareholders, because it is not sustainable. Every organization which is commercial in nature needs to return a satisfactory investment return to its shareholders, without which its sustainability comes into question. And when we have examples such as what has happened in the UK market with aggregators, you know, there is a lot of concern in terms of what that could do to our market. Thankfully, the insurers here have the ability to look at the UK market, which has typically been a bellwether for us, and take home some learnings and some truths in terms of what to do and what not to do. So will they or will they not? I don't know. What I do know is that over the next 24 months, a lot of things are going to come to the fore. We are headed for a pretty exciting and challenging time in the overall insurance space. In the commercial lines, as we have seen, you know, things still look a bit bleak. And you know, no matter who I speak to, says that it's going to be flat at best. and probably drop about 5% at worst. In the personal lines, we probably have we have the other trend, so it's probably 3 to 4% at worst, and hopefully 5 or 7% best. But overall, if you start look at the market, it is not where it needs to be because there is still plenty of capital, excess capacity in the reinsurance space, which finds itself an attractive home in the Australian market. Very clearly, one of the things that's going to determine whether challengers are going to be able to compete in the personal line space is their ability to attract customers and service them in a cost-effective manner. And if they are able to achieve that, then we will genuinely have some competition to the big two in the years to come. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Vivek, for a fascinating discussion on those alternative pathways to market, particularly with Wesfarmers' initiative in distributing through Coles. I have to admit, I don't spend a lot of time in Coles. Lane Cove have had a new Woolworths put in, and it's really quite good there, so you'll have to work on that. But one of the things, one of the places I do spend a lot of time in is Bunnings at Artarmon, and it's a very good Wesfarmers brand. And thinking about the potential for distributing insurance product through Bunnings, you know, a lot of people that go to Bunnings have houses. They're doing home renovations and whatnot. And I was thinking, you know, like home insurance, particularly the public liability side of it, and then maybe personal injury insurance, that would be pretty good. But while there isn't obviously a need, I do think the claims experience would be quite poor, so you'd have to watch out for that because, yeah, a lot of damage goes on with the people at Bunnings. But thanks again for that, that
thanks,
talk.
Thanks, Warwick. I'd definitely keep all those new product designs in place.
Great. Yeah, you can slip me a little commission for that later on. So our final speaker is Simon Lindsay. Simon is the Country Manager Australia for the Progressive Corporation. Simon has held this role since 2008, leading Progressive's entry into the Australian motor insurance market with the launch of Progressive Direct, an online car insurance offering in December 2009. I think, Adam, you might have to change your notes about the chronology of when Progressive got into the market there, a little bit of a disconnect. But maybe Simon will give us more information on that. Prior to this role, Simon spent 10 years working in financial institution advisory with JP Morgan and Merrill Lynch, primarily focused on the insurance sector. Born in Perth, Western Australia, Simon has spent most of his career in Melbourne, in addition to several years in Sydney and New York. Please welcome Simon.
Thanks, Warwick, and thanks to the Institute for inviting me here today. It's been a great start to a sunny conference. And I guess thinking about what Vivek said earlier on about his kids, he clearly has older, slightly more sophisticated kids than I do, because when I explained to my five-year-old that I was on the Gold Coast and explained the beautiful pools and everything, he sort of was trying to explain to me how he needed to come through the phone and be there straight away. Even through today, there's been a lot of discussion about the challenger brands and, you know, the changing landscape of the car insurance sector in particular. And rather than to get too bogged down with getting into that into a lot more detail, what I wanted to do today was talk more about the role of the internet at a sort of more macro level and how we might expect the volume and the scope of transactions that the consumer does over the internet to grow over the next few years. And the advantage I have of going last is that I get to steal some fun facts. And so the main one I'd like to steal is one from Sid, who earlier mentioned that the industry is now expecting sales over the internet to approach 20% by 2014. And to share credit, I believe that was from the JP Morgan Deloitte survey. I saw Elaine and others from Deloitte here, so that was a co-authored document, I believe. And so how I wanted to talk about that was to really focus on three topics. One is a little bit of introduction about Progressive and who we are, and you know, arguably have a little bit of role of how the internet is has grown in the sector, particularly in the US. And then talk a little bit about the US experience and some macro trends that we've seen over the last 10 to 20 years, which you know could provide a bit of a lead indicator to what we could expect in Australia. And then finally, just coming back to Australia to identify some circumstances where we think you know, add up to the internet continuing to grow in its role within car insurance particularly. So firstly, a quick introduction to Progressive. Many of you may have heard of Progressive, and after today it has been mentioned a couple of times, so undoubtedly you all have now. But Progressive is a fairly old company. It's been around for over 70 years. Started off as a fairly humble small mutual with around $10,000, and the central aim was really to provide affordable car insurance to the middle market. And I guess at the time, car insurance was quite expensive back then. Still is, some might argue. And you know, it's founded by a couple of lawyers who thought they had a role to play there, and they particularly thought that claims wasn't being done well, and that was their sort of their niche opportunity. And the distribution method, of course, is really a door-to-door sale, and that's a door-to-door sale, you know, channel. And it seems like there's a theme about going back in history today, but that's a link I found on the internet, and I guess that's the kind of car we might have insured back then. So if we fast forward to 2010, you know, Progressive has been a bit of a success story. It's now a Fortune 500 company, and you know, if you go back to 87, that was the first time we got to $1 billion in premium, and then in 92 got to $2 billion, and now it's at about $15 billion. And the good news is, as Adam pointed out before, there's no risk that the Australian business is making a dent on that just yet. But you know, at the moment, Progressive insures around 10 million cars. But the interesting thing at the moment is, you know, internet is definitely the growth channel. It's where there's a lot of investment and focus from us, and it's where the consumer wants to be at the moment. And an interesting fact is that we have around 3 million customers who have elected to go paperless, which you know has grown from a million of 2 or 3 years ago. It's now 3 million. That basically means they're just preferring to get their bills and all their documentation via email, their online account. So it gives you a bit of an indication of where that's going. So if you think about the US market from a distribution point of view, it's quite different to the Australia in the sense that it's quite diverse, whereas Australia is mostly direct. In the US, direct is still only 21% of the market, and it's still dominated really by the traditional agency-based distribution. Progressive operates across all fronts, except for captive agents, but we, you know, we have call center distribution, internet, and we also sell through independent agents, which is probably the slower one, but it's still, you know, what you might call a cash cow. But given that low percentage, the really big, I guess, tectonic shift in the US market over the last 20 years has been a shift to the direct channel. So probably intuitively it makes a lot of sense that consumers are better off. You know, Anthony talked about that convenience and direct response makes a lot of sense, but it goes to show you it does take a lot of time to win the consumer over, and that's been a very gradual trend, even though we'd expect it to continue, but it's taken, you know, 18 years to get to 21%. And a key driver of that trend has been a pretty massive marketing assault where I guess the insurers have taken their positions and the boundary lines have been set, and not only they promoting their own brands, but I guess a way of how they should insure their car. But it's, according to Dowling & Partners, a US company, it's the US auto market, as they call it, is auto insurance market is now almost $5 billion in total marketing spend in 2009. And you know, fair to say the two protagonists are Geico and Progressive, who are really the direct brands or the heavyweights in that sector. And both of them really started attacking the market in the 80s, and Geico got the head start. And most of you might know that Berkshire Hathaway owns Geico, and you know, Warren Buffett's investment company. And his instructions were pretty simple, I guess, back in the 80s, which was to take Geico from a kind of slow government insurance company and transform it into a growth company, and don't let money stand in the way. And if anyone's been in the US, they'll probably know what he meant by that, because they're pretty much everywhere. And progressive was a little bit behind, but in recent years, we've now got a good campaign and a good product and pricing, and now we're sort of a little bit behind, but both spending around $500 million a year on marketing. And I was going to mention one interesting tidbit for some of the young actuaries here is that you may have read that Warren Buffett has recently recruited a potential successor, a guy by the name Todd Combs. And he's a pretty ordinary guy, but he happened to be a progressive pricing analyst a few years ago, and a pretty regular guy, but he could be running Berkshire Hathaway in a couple of years. The interesting subplot within the direct segment is that there's a very clear shift to the internet, and Vivek and others have touched on it today, but in the US, it certainly starts with the consumer getting comfortable using the internet to research and quote online, but then what we've seen in recent years is a shift to a greater willingness to buy the policy online, so that's really accelerated in recent years. And again, these brands are pretty well placed to take advantage of that trend. And an interesting perspective is that these brands are actually quite small in the grand scheme of things. State Farm and Allstate really dominate the market. And these two only have about 15% of the market. But right now, they're getting about 57% of online quotes. And this is further played out if you look at Geico over the last 10 years, where it was essentially a direct response call center business, and over the last several years has transformed into an internet business where now 70% of quotes and 55% of sales are from their website. I talked about marketing, and certainly having a big marketing campaign is a prerequisite to have a position at the table in the US. But in addition, there's a lot of investment on the IT front, and Progressive's claim to fame, and at least internally, is that we were the first company to sell a policy online back in 97. But since then, there's been sort of ongoing investment. And I guess one difference that I've noticed in Australia is that in the US, you have the equivalence of the AMIs and NRMA will have the option of going online or through a call centre, and you'll get an online account to do all those transactions, which hasn't quite happened here yet, and arguably that will happen soon. And it's no secret, I think this screen's already been up so far today, but that's kind of our focus at the moment in Australia, and that's the online approach, where we're, similar to the US, offering all the transactions to be done online. The difference is, I guess, we don't have a call centre for the sales and service side of things. So the question, I guess, is online car insurance, or is Australia ready for online car insurance? And I guess, the answer is probably yes. It's more about the why. So firstly, I think we all would appreciate it's an internet-savvy market and the penetration's high. eMarketer estimates that 71% of people and around 16 million households will have internet access by 2014. But the other interesting thing is 6 million households already have broadband. And then the other really big interesting thing is that obviously, personal e-commerce is already big, but it's going to continue to accelerate. eMarketer expect that it'll be $28 billion by 2014, and it's really led by the big categories of travel and entertainment. But the other interesting thing, and I think, again, to keep using Sid's name, I think he asked a question earlier about, well, how do we think about the customer that's going through the internet channel? And I think Buzz was right to dodge that question, but the reality is you should expect that it is a slightly different person we're dealing with. If you look at statistics from the Australian Bureau of Statistics, of those people that had internet access in 2009, 64% made a transaction or made a purchase over the internet. Then if you break that down further by a younger adult, 25 to 34, that number jumps to 75%. And if you go to high earners over $120,000 a year, jumps to 85%, and if you go to the more educated, the university degree type people, it jumps to 78%. And we also know that someone over the purchasing things over the internet most likely has a credit card, so again, that probably says something about them too. And, a recent survey we did, highlights that people are obviously buying over the internet for value, but probably first and foremost, it is about convenience. People are short on time, and they want to avoid all the hassle, and the paper hassle, the sales hassle. And we also confirm that, you know, airline and books are the big categories, but there are, you know, car insurance is creeping up there. The other sort of macro characteristic in front of in favour of Australia doing more online, I guess, is it's already a really direct market. Again, this is now old. I'll have to get the 2010 version, but, you know, call it around 70% of the market's already direct. So it's probably a small step then for the consumer to do more online, whether it's through an online specialist or just one of the traditional brands. That all said, you know, if you go back to recent surveys, you know, internet sales is only about 8% as recent as 2008, and there's all sorts of numbers around, but I don't think that's that inaccurate. And, you know, I think anecdotally we know that a lot of people are researching online but not necessarily buying online. And, you know, one question is that also because it hasn't been promoted as actively here as it has in the US and UK? And, you know, do they have the tools to realise that? So one major catalyst, which is in a way a sub-segment of the new challenger brands in the market, is this new category that, for want of a better phrase, is this online-owned category. And it's really only three players at the moment, which is Bingle, Progressive, and The Buzz. And the basic premise is, you know, is a pretty strict concept, and I shouldn't speak, you know, for The Buzz and Bingle, although I think they'd mostly agree that the basic premise is you research, you quote, you buy, and you do your transactions online. There's no call centres for sales and services, but there is for a claim, and you can also lodge a claim online. So it is a very strict, streamlined approach. It's not for everyone. And then in turn, you know, the consumer might expect that they'll get a better value proposition, much like they might get with an online banking account, might expect a higher interest rate because they're, you know, the overheads might not be as high. I can assure you the marketing costs are, but the overheads certainly aren't. And then, you know, obviously the segment is about convenience, which is what this offers. And I think the other interesting fact is if you think about those three brands, they're all backed by a big multi-billion dollar company, so there should be some trust. But that all said, I've made a very high-level estimate of what this market would be, and at best, it's 30 million, maybe in a year's time it's 30 million, but it's probably well under that. And Bingle's the first one out of the gate, and that would have the lion's share of that. But it's still, as Adam pointed out, you know, these brands are still very, very light on and not really making a dent, and they might not for a long time. And, you know, one structural disadvantage they have, which is pretty obvious, is that they don't have a call centre. And for anyone involved in sales, you know that the call centre is the one part, the one tool you have that you can use to improve your conversion. Two last things I'll just touch on. One is, you know, there's, and Vivek touched on this as well, but there's a clear trend where there is more shopping and there is more online shopping, and the winner is certainly Google. We're all paying thousands every day to Google to be part of their search engine, and, you know, statistics we got suggest that people searching car insurance in Google has grown by about 150% since 2006, and doesn't seem like it's slowing down anytime soon. And, you know, even the term like compare car insurance has grown, which sort of suggests that even though we're all saying aggregators probably not making an impact just yet, but the consumer is certainly looking for it. And the final point I'll just say is just on the, you know, when we think about what's going through the consumer's mind, it's clear that there's been a willingness to shop or research online, but a recent survey by Google suggests that perhaps the mindset is shifting a little bit to more, you know, greater willingness to actually consummate the transaction online. And this survey is probably highly biased because it's an online survey, but of the 200 participants, when asked, once you've settled on your carrier, how will you buy that policy? And 68% said they'd buy it online. So it's probably way less than that, but directionally, it feels like that's certainly happening. So I guess the upshot of all this, the conclusion is, I think we'd all agree that Sid's number is probably not far off. It's going to happen. The consumer is looking for it, and then I think the industry collectively is providing the tools. And so probably we shouldn't be that surprised if that growth occurs. And it's going to be the online only guys, but it's also going to be the traditional brands that are probably going to see that more and more people will be buying online. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Simon. We all now have the unique opportunity to ask questions and generate some discussion with three CEOs. I noticed Simon's title is country manager, but I'll call him a CEO for today, of three insurance companies, which is a rare privilege indeed. Some people have already taken advantage of putting through questions while the speakers have been talking, so I don't even have to turn to my pre-prepared Dorothy Dix questions because you're already off and running. Please, if you have a burning question, get your SMS in. I can't remember the number. Probably up there. Here it goes. 0400987791. And before long, the screen in front of me will be filled with questions. I'll go for the first one, and it's to you, Anthony. You talked about the scale of pricing and distribution. Does the possibility of web scraping of competitors' pricing and the rise of the internet undermine these advantages?
Yeah. Sorry, thanks. I actually liked your other questions better than those ones, so you're pre-prepared, we're better. I think, I think obviously, you know, web scraping or whatever it is researching what other carriers are charging and using their pricing. So that's been going on for years. So we used to do it manually. I know I used to get involved in ringing around and doing surveys of what are the other pricing. I think the sophistication and what's going into the pricing engines now, you know, there's greater sophistication that goes deeper than that technology can't pick that up just through, you know, research. And I think we've seen that to some extent with the aggregated models where you're given a standard set of questions and you come up with a price. But if you go to the insurer and get a deeper understanding of the risk itself, then you're seeing that the pricing comes out in a different manner. And I guess that's one of our beliefs around the scale advantage. I think the scale advantage also doesn't come into account when you look at the overall cost of the business and the scale advantages you get through your claims and your distribution and how you're managing your business, which I think are there as well. You know, the procurement and other things that come into your pricing. So whilst you can copy the pricing, to some extent, there are other factors that go into it. So I'm not sure that it comes in. It's obviously a risk, but it's always been there, I guess.
Great. Thanks, Anthony. I guess this one is sort of open to all of the panel members. We talked a lot about changes to distribution pathways to market, but what product innovations do you think, if any, will happen in personal lines over the coming years? Vivek, you want to start with that one? No.
I can. So in terms of product innovations, I think that insurance is probably one of the last industries which is still product-centric as opposed to customer-centric. And, we have started to see, even in small businesses, you know, the whole concept of business insurance, which basically bundles the product to meet the needs of the customer, i.e. the small business. And I see that going forward to be applicable to personal buyers, as insurance buyers as well. And over a period of time, that will be what the consumer wants. And it would be the responsibility of the insurers to provide that, as opposed to differential.
I guess the other point that I'd make is when you're buying an insurance product, you're buying more than just a policy document. And there's more to the service offering. And I guess where you're seeing a lot of innovation now come through is in the claims, which is the fulfillment. So I think you're going to see more innovation in the claims in how you deliver the fulfillment, and whether it be, you know, the speed in which you're able to get claims paid, the use of other services to improve that. And I think that's where the innovation's coming in the service offering, more so than the actual wording itself.
Yeah, I'd tend to agree there with Anthony. I mean, I think there's already a fair bit of innovation in the front end. We'll probably see a bit more of that, but even an example would be online claims. You know, that's evolving, and I think the consumer will enjoy that. And you know, I think the other thing that probably Yui is taking the lead on, at least with their advertising, is more personalised pricing. So perhaps that's another source of innovation.
Great. I think this one is for you, Simon. In the presentation, you showed the percentage of people that inquire online and the percentage of people that buy online. Buying online was still a relatively small percentage of those that inquire. Your survey looked at reasons why people buy online. Did you look at reasons why people didn't buy online, why they inquired and then bought from another source?
Not in that survey, but I guess anecdotally we've got some intuitive guesses around that, and what we've heard, you know, insurance is certainly a trust product, so there's a big chunk of the population that just want to, at the end of the day, talk to someone, and there's going to always be a lot of people that want to do that. And another area is people, whether it's real or perceived, think that they might haggle and get a better price, and in some instances that's the case. And I think ultimately people that do it that way just want to have that final confirmation that it's all good. And that's why it will take long, a while for that to evolve.
I was just wondering, is there still an inherent concern around security within the Australian market of people that use the internet to inquire but not purchase? Is there a security element there?
Yeah, it comes down to some people just aren't prepared to give their credit card details over the internet yet.
I think that happened. It certainly happened with, you know, banking online. I remember when first banking online came in place, everyone was going, oh, I'm not going to give away my details, and I'm a bit worried about security around that. And I think, you know, most people nowadays bank online and they got used to it. So I think it's going to have an enormous uplift when it comes. You know, in the commercial insurance space, we saw a change from about 38%, you know, using the web portals 2 years ago to we're up to about 48% now using online inquiries through the purchase decision. Is I think it's more about the trust, mm-hmm. and also the complexity around the different types of coverages that you do have and the different offerings.
That sort of comes into another question around we're seeing banks now moving from internet banking into other sorts of technological advances like iPhone apps for inquiries and small transactions. Do you think that's something that might be useful in the insurance industry?
I think it's already started. So I think, you know, we're working on at the moment in our commercial insurance is online claims, which you can go into your computer and look at claims. A broker can do that. The next evolution of that is using your iPhone and doing that. That's pretty easy to do, to switch across to that. So that's already started, and there's a lot of development going on right now in most areas. I think there's a lot of research that you can do with apps on your iPhone already. And if you go in and have a look, there's a whole lot of apps around that. So I think it's there already. And it's just an evolution, and you know, there's going to be a lot more information for people, a lot quicker and a lot easier.
I think that's right, and I agree with Anthony that it's not a major leap from apps being available on the web to being available on the mobile. However, I guess the differences between banking and insurance is that banking is more of a frequent use product, whereas insurance. We'd be lucky to get them once in a year, you know, interested in insurance. So I think that is a challenge in terms of the volume scale balance game. But I think over a period of time, people will get, as both the panelists have said, more comfortable and trustworthy in terms of dealing online.
Great. I'm going to read one from the screen now because they're starting to flip by and I'm missing them, so sorry about that if I've missed your question. But the next one says, from personal experience, the benefit of buying online is price savings, but the risk is poor after sales service. Those who have had a claim will know the value of good service. How do online insurers compete on claim service? Simon.
Yes, that's for me. That's actually an interesting question because, in a way, it's a bit of a it's a misconception to think that it's any different to a normal insurance company because we're not asking you to use your internet to fix your car. I mean, if you have a claim, you're either going to call in the claim or lodge it online, but ultimately you're going to have people on the ground coordinating the repair of your car. So, and that's part of the barrier for this kind of category. It's getting people a bit educated about, well, it's no different. All the insurance companies effectively outsource their claims. They outsource them to body repair shops. The role of the insurance company is more about coordinating how that happens and managing the quality assurance and getting the car back to them in time, with the repair done. So, you do the same that other insurers do. Probably the bigger disadvantage is the online insurers like us are a bit smaller, so that's probably the more structural disadvantage.
The next question I have, this might be for Anthony. Given the changing profile of business owners, do you see more products, commercial SME, being sold online? And what impact will this have on the role of insurance brokers going forward?
I think particularly for the micro SME, we're seeing more online research. So that's a very small end of the SME market. And we launched a simple product at the end of last year that's the first commercial online product through our AAMI brand, which was for market stalls. Did extremely well for a very small market segment, which is a very simple purchase. And I think those lend themselves to the online. I think the complexity of a commercial business is a hell of a lot different, and you do need some form of advice, whether that be through your agents or whether it be your call centres or the broker market. So I think when you're buying a commercial product, you can walk in and you can say what car you drive. So everyone knows basically what car you drive. You can describe that and you can go through what it is. But when you go and describe, I've got an engineering business, and all the complexities that have come as part of that, it's pretty hard to put that into an online application and drive that through to make sure you've got the right coverage. Plus, your livelihood depends on it. So there's that factor as well. So I think the broker market certainly has a role to play, but I think their role is going to be more about the advice they provide and the types of coverages that they need, rather than shopping around and getting the cheapest price. So it's more about the types of coverage, where's the best place, and the advice they're providing.
I think I totally agree with Anthony. In terms of the value of advice, especially for a commercial business where that's what brings in your bacon every day, is very essential, especially when we look at stats today in the Australian market, where one in four small businesses are either underinsured or uninsured. And typically when you start looking at the lack of business interruption covers, if you try and put that into a commoditized online offering, then the value of advice and the obligation of the duty of care that we have is probably neglected.
Well, my questions have rolled back. That's very good, thank you. They're a lot for Simon. This is a three-part question, Simon. I'll ask them in each part. Why has Progressive come to Australia?
Right. Well, if you lived overseas, wouldn't you want to come to Australia?
True.
No, I mean, the truth is, we've talked about this before, so I don't mind talking about this, but, I mean, I think the concept of the business model is really exciting to, say, the CEO of Progressive to see if we can, make a fist of an online-only model. And then if you sort of combine that with a pretty internet-savvy consumer market, that's good. And then, fair to say, when you look around the world and there's one market with 75% market concentration, that would also suggest that, well, that's an attraction. Didn't necessarily know that there was going to be 6 to 10 other brands that would, flood the market soon after. But I think, the basic premise is, and the CEO would say this, nothing in Australia is going to move the needle for Progressive US, but what we'd like to do is to test this business model and to make it profitable over a 10-year period.
Okay, so that sort of answered the third question. The first question's disappeared. But the first question left here now is, what is Progressive's competitive advantage relative to its competitors in the market?
Okay, should I put that in a white paper just to spill it all out? Well, look, I mean, I think that online only segment has advantages and disadvantages, and we fall into that. But I think the advantage Buzz, Bingle and we have is that we're sort of saying no to the call centre, and we think that can be an efficient way to distribute the product, but also it it might attract the right sort of customer. And then, you know, at the end of the day, I guess it does come down to execution. So who's executing the best? And everyone has their own different view on pricing. We're no different. We have our view on pricing. Yui has their view on pricing. So I guess we'd all argue we each have a competitive advantage in the way we look at pricing. The unfortunate thing is, I guess one of us is going to be wrong.
Okay. I guess an earlier question related to these issues, and maybe we can and look at different market segments as well. Given that we've had a number of new competitors emerging over the last two or so years, does anyone see that there could be more challenges coming in the short to medium future into the Australian market, whether it be personal lines or SME?
Well, I think you need to have a crystal ball to know whether there's going to be an event, and should you budget for it appropriately in next year's budget. Is the same question as how many new challenger brands or organizations are going to come and try the luck in the Australian space. From our perspective, it doesn't really matter. It's healthy competition as long as there is underwriting sense, especially in the commercial line space. What we don't want is plenty of underwriting agencies with a free hand and a pen with a lot of excess capacity at the reinsurance end to back it, because that is not in anyone's interest. In the personal line space, I think that there is less probability of that happening.
Yeah, I think I certainly think the Australian market's attractive to overseas players. And the reason being is, traditionally it's a pretty stable market, our economy's gone through, it's been fairly robust over the last few years, so it becomes an attractive market in that. I think what's detracting it a little bit at the moment is the last 3 years and how many events we've had, which keeps getting smacked. But we'd like a couple of years quiet now. And I think particularly the newer carriers coming into it is their ability to respond to that from a claims environment. If you don't have an infrastructure coming in, you lose your reputation fairly quickly if you don't get the claims right. So I think that's probably the hardest thing for any new entrant into this market is ensuring you've got the right infrastructure from day one.
The only thing I'd add is you certainly wouldn't underestimate new entrants coming in, but if you sort of think about all the new entrants that came in recently, in a way the plans were fairly cemented pre-GFC, and perhaps that probably slows things down a little bit potentially, because people have got enough to focus on in Europe and the US rather than new market expansion.
Okay, we're slowly running out of questions here, so if there's no other questions coming through, looking up the back there, there's one more coming through. So while that one's coming through, I might be able to ask one of my questions. And really, I guess it's related to the last one, in that given that the market is so competitive, and we've also heard a lot of stuff about APRA regulation and capital requirements, and it does appear the insurance industry thinks that's pretty tough. What do they find attractive about Australia, these new players? What is it, as you said, Simon, before, a bit of a testing market for other things, or is it because we have such great weather, or what is the thing that is attractive?
Well, I think you and Auto in general have made the right move by actually, I think they're based around here. Mm-hmm. But to be candid with you, I think from, say, a US point of view, some attractions of the fact that there is a good regulatory environment and, you know, common language and a regulatory environment were certainly big ticks. You know, when you start talking to a board about going to a new country, I guess, that's something that makes them feel a lot better about things. It's certainly not a massive market, but China's a massive market, but then that's kind of potentially extremely messy in many, you know, many scenarios. Mm-hmm. So, yep. You know, a stable environment, I guess you'd characterise it.
Stable and familiar, it sounds familiar, like, yeah.
From our perspective, you know, it's a new market segment as opposed to a new entrant, you know, where we see the opportunity for a profitable return over a reasonable time frame is what the West Farmers test is for entering any new business.
Here's an interesting question: how do each of you buy your insurance?
I speak to my wife, and she does it for me. It's a true story. I don't touch it. I know too much about it. So, she is a broker.
Getting gouged.
I can't compete with that, Anthony. But we have staff insurances, so it gets taken care of, you know, internally. So it makes the process slightly easier. However. You know, it's also a great way to test out your claims process, because when your wife makes the claim and she gives you a call, then you know that something's not right.
Simon?
Yeah, so by default, I buy mine online because that would be the right thing to do. But I, in all honesty, I think if we weren't in the market, I don't see why I wouldn't just buy through Bingle. I'd buy through Bingle. Why would I? You know, that'd probably be my lowest cost, and it's a simple, easy product. My wife might. They don't do the car rental, so she might get nervous about that. But at the end of the day, I just want the security. It's a big company behind it, and it's online and easy.
And so, as the only non-aligned panel member, you might not be surprised to know that the way I buy my insurance is I just sign the renewal form and send it back in the mail from whence it came, and that's the extent of my shopping.
So. 4 out of 5 people are like you. So.
Okay, I've prompted a few more questions coming through. There are 6 or 7 new entrants in the personal lines market. In the medium to long term, how many do you think will survive?
You know, there was over the weekend in Sydney, there was a festival of the body, mind and spirit. And there was a tent where they had about 40 psychics. I'll ask them next time. I'll come back to you with that.
And some might say that this is a room of nearly 200 crystal ball gazers, so maybe we can all do our best to help. One's typing up as we speak. Okay. How important is social media to your organisation?
I can go. It's a very important a platform, I think. I'm not sure whether businesses in general have been able to leverage the social platform proactively in an ROI sense as such. But I think it is important enough for us to keep a very close watch on developments on social media, what's happening locally and internationally, and what innovative organizations are doing utilizing the social media as a platform to promote and perhaps sell.
I think it's incredibly important, in the organisation as a whole, but I think the industry itself has probably been underweight in its utilisation of it for the role that we play. You know, I think that you look at the amount of money that's been spent over the last couple of years just in managing natural disasters and our investment in the broader economy. In comparison to what the government's done, we've overachieved, yet got no value out of that. Yeah. You know, that's just a plain fact. Yeah. You know, and I think that that's something that the industry has to get better at to understand the value of what we contribute to the broader economy and the broader community.
So we can all click on follow Wesfarmers or Suncorp or Progressive. I want to follow you. Yeah, yeah, great.
To be on Twitter for that. So.
Oh, sorry. All right, well, I think we'll wrap it up there. I know that there's a panel member that needs to rush off and catch a aeroplane back to Sydney. So if you can thank the panel members in the appropriate way, and I'll step over here and get their wine.